Three, two, one.
Here we go.
Who's
the best show here?
That show!
Who's the best show here?
That show!
Good. That's the best one yet.
Pizza, pizza.
I use the bathroom.
Big O! Showtime! You were making it for young in the kitchen. I was in the dining room having sushi.
It's a limousine tech show, and that's fact. If you don't like the cast, you can stick it up your ass. Ain't no fuddy-duddies that'll make it bad. But there's no link, go to back to dlmgs.org. And I see chills at linuxdate.net. Bound Tech Show. Just sit right there, cause the castle's just about to begin.
Welcome to episode 938 of the Linux Link Tech Show. On the show tonight, we have Pat.
What's up?
We have Joel.
Evening.
We have Joe.
Hello.
Yeah. So, now I was kind of alluding to a pre-show of the series of small disasters that happened here this past week. We were doing well going into the weekend, and my wife woke me up around midnight on Saturday, which would be Sunday, I guess, midnight Sunday. And said, I think the heater's no longer working. And that just happened to be like the coldest day of the year so far, or the coldest day of the winter so far, was Saturday. And, you know, sure enough, it wasn't working. So I tried to look at and read the directions and stuff and probably, you know, troubleshoot it, but, I'm not HVAC, and it's not our heater, and I called emergency. We called emergency maintenance. They're like, best we could do right now is bring you some space heaters and drop, you know, come by on Monday to fix it.
Shit.
So it was only like 24 hours. Now, it was annoying because my wife has very, very, very expensive plants, and they have to maintain a certain temperature up there, and it was getting too cold, so she was scrambling around to get some space heaters in there. So we got... It was fine. The next day she went out and bought some more space heaters just to be on the safe side up there. But when we went to go take up one of the space heaters to my middle daughter, Avery, her room, because she has birds in her room and we didn't want them to get too cold, I found out that a couple of the outlets out there don't work. So I need to have them come in and fix the electrical in that room. This is the second room that we've had electrical problems in, and it's been weird. Like, it was fine up until the one that we had this year, or 2021, was fine up until like spring, and then it stopped, took out the whole dining room area. And so they had to come out, and then they found like a bad receptacle. And the weird thing was the circuit that the dining room was on also had the two outdoor outlets, the front and back. And the front one, which nobody knew that was on that same outlet, they found that and it was bad. So they replaced it. And then it happened again, a couple months later. And there was a faulty ground or something. It was something they had to replace something again. So they had to come back out, have the electrician come out and replace it again. And then now it's been working fine. But I noticed that upstairs in her room. Now her room is a bit of a mess, right? And she has way too many clothes. I mean, way too many clothes. When I tell you she has way too many clothes,
it just seems like it because they're all over the damn floor.
Well, not just that, okay? I have two drawers. I only wear t-shirts, so I have two drawers. Each drawer has four rows of t-shirts, and there's probably like eight t-shirts in a row, and I have two drawers filled like that, right? She has more underwear than I have t-shirts. And I know this because we cleaned out her entire room, and all that laundry I spent Sunday, Monday, and Tuesday, load after load, washing and folding.
Just to go back on the floor.
Well, no, this is the thing here. Maybe, Joe. I hope not. But we told her, look, either you get rid of this stuff, take it to Goodwill or whatever, or you get a storage locker. So she got a storage locker. So she's paying for a storage locker now to and all that stuff that she's not going to wear is going over there. And she's getting a set of dressers, dresser
that
drawers.
She's not going to wear. It makes more sense to just donate this shit.
Oh, no. God. Hey, man, I agree with you, but she I think she has to face the reality here. I mean, she wears it. But she wears it and throws it on the floor, and then it gets under, and then you don't see it for like a couple months. You know what I mean? That kind of
thing. The next time she, you know, she does laundry, it's like all her stuff is brand new.
Yeah.
She's never seen that shirt before.
Well, I was doing the laundry, pumping it through, and then I'm thinking it was Tuesday. Day morning or Monday morning, I can't remember which. No, it was Monday morning. I noticed that the dryer wasn't no longer heating, and so I'm like,
and that's yours.
Yeah,
you have to fix.
And I'm like, there's a shit ton of clothes here that I have to get through, and the dryer's no longer heating. Now, luckily, I have two dryers in my garage. Because I rescued one from the neighbors who were moving out of here. It's trash. They didn't want it. And then when Paige moved into her new apartment place, the studio apartment, we had bought them a washer and dryer, and they didn't have a hookup for it there, so it's been in my garage. So I dragged the one, and that was a pain in the ass. I did that by myself at like 7 o'clock in the morning. I dragged it down here and put it in. And it worked perfectly, no problem. Oh, that was such a pain in the ass because it had the vent hose, the lint hose hookup is technically
down at the bottom in the back.
It's in the front, but in order to get to it, you have to take off the back panel. And then there's two ways it can go. It could either go out the side or out the back. And it has what they had in there was a small bit of hose about a foot long, the ducting or whatever. It was about a foot and a half, 2 feet long from the where the lint blower is out to the back. And then they had this little piece that fit over top of it. And then it went into the other side. And I had such a hardship trying to get that thing in there, get the hose that I had on there, or ducting I had. But it took me a bit of finagling. I got it. It wasn't the ideal thing. And I was just like, I never used this dryer before. I had no idea if it would work or not. It did, and it smelled like old people, but that's fine because it is drying like a champ. Yeah, it's got my
clothes. Put a dryer sheet in there, and it's not going to smell like old people for long.
Yeah, so
that's right.
I have my other dryer right here next to me. I have to pull that back off and start testing things and find out what went bad on that, so I can replace the parts in there. And then I'll have three working dryers again. And then I thought, you know, I'm kind of like one down. One iffy. I mean, I'm still on the fence of whether I can fix the dryer here, if I could get the right, you know, troubleshoot it and figure out what it is and everything. I'm hoping it's just one of the thermostats. That should be a no-brainer, easy fix, so long as the parts aren't going to be too expensive. But anyway, I have a PlayStation 5 controller, and it was a newer one. I noticed that it was no longer charging, and buttons weren't working properly on it. So I just figured, why not just take it apart and see what I could see on it? Those things, man, holy moly. I found it a little easier to take apart than the PlayStation 4 controller, but that was just to get the case pieces off. That thing is so packed with stuff in there. It looks like it's going to be a nightmare to troubleshoot further. So I took it apart. I cleaned some of the stuff out in there, the connector for the USB. I also reseated the battery on there, made sure everything looked all right, put it back together, and it was working for a little bit, but then the button stopped working again. So I don't know. I'm still messing around with it. I should probably look and see if it's still under warranty.
If you've already taken it apart, then the answer is no.
Well, but you can't tell I took it apart. The nice thing about this is you can't tell you took it apart. It's not like it scuffs the case up and everything.
So it turns on, it connects. It's just sometimes the buttons don't work.
Yeah, well, for the longest time, it was working perfectly, and then it wouldn't charge anymore. Right. And then when I would get it to have a charge, it wouldn't, like, it just wouldn't connect to the PlayStation. It wouldn't connect. It wouldn't work. I'd start to notice the few times that it did, the buttons wouldn't work. It was like you would press them and they're not doing anything. And I don't know if it's because it was losing connectivity or whether they just wouldn't work. Now, when I took it apart, put it back together, and it started it looked like it was charging again. It looked like it had a full charge, actually. And it was working fine for about a half hour, and it was plugged in to the PlayStation with the USB cord that I use on the other one, and I've tried a bunch of different cords, and I even got some new cords. And it was, like I said, it was working fine for about a half hour or so, and then it just was, the control stick seemed to be working fine, but I wasn't getting any response from the buttons.
Okay, after you got done playing and the buttons quit working, did you let it charge again?
Yeah, I had it up and it was on the USB for overnight, and I tried it again and it just wasn't working.
Okay, the buttons still weren't working. Okay.
No, I don't think it was connecting. I'll have to try it again tomorrow, but it wasn't really working.
It might need a replacement battery if it's just not got enough charge. I mean, even wired, it might require some battery power for it to work correctly.
Yeah, but the weird thing about it is it looks like that when I had it on,
fully charged, but if it was discharging light, too quickly.
Yeah, the light on there was still blue. But I don't, you know, I have to double check it again. And you're right, maybe it is. Now, the thing is, they say that, I've read places that they're like, oh, you can't replace the battery on these things. And I'm like, what are you talking about? You just pop the cover off and unscrew two things, and there's the battery right there. You just unhook it. Why couldn't you replace the battery on this?
I have no idea. I haven't worked on them. But if it's a standard 3.7 volt LiPo battery, then it should just be, get one that's a similar size, cut off the connector, and solder it on.
I'm thinking you probably shouldn't even have to do that. I'm sure there's people selling that battery. The connector probably is just... It's just like every other controller I've seen with a battery. It just plugs right into the board on there. It should. I'm gonna see if there's. Yep.
Unless it's married to the board, which would be stupid.
Which would be Sony.
No, the battery is not, because, like I said, it had. What's that type of connection on the motherboard? It's like two little prongs that you push.
I know
in
what you're talking about.
I forget what they call those. So that's exactly what it was. It was like what I've seen on older MP3 devices.
It's just a 2-pin connector. I don't even know what they're called.
Yeah, so I see that there's some battery replacements for sale. Nothing, obviously, nothing official.
Yeah, it just kind of sounds like it's not getting enough power, and the one time you were able to get it to have enough power, it just drained so quickly that it went right back to acting stupid.
Yeah, that's what I'm wondering, and that's unfortunate.
Yeah.
Yep.
It's unfortunate, Joel.
Especially since them damn things cost so much, man.
But yeah. If you have something else that has a LiPo battery in it, you could test your theory by doing what I said.
Yeah, I have to look around. Yep. I think I should. I don't think the... I have to double check the connections on the PlayStation 4 battery and the 5. But I'll tell you what, dude, there's highway robbery on those things, man. If you yep. look what they're selling for, a PlayStation 5 controller, official PlayStation 5 controller, starts at, like, I think $59 or $69. $59.
Yeah, no. It's no, like, I'm good.
What's that?
No, I'm good.
You're
good?
No, I don't need one. Thanks.
You don't need what? A PlayStation 5 controller?
Nope. I do need a PS3. Nope. I need a couple of PS3 controllers, but yeah, I'm not paying Cosmic $60 each.
Red.
One. Yeah, they started.
DualSense. Yeah, the Cosmic Red one is $74.
I will say that I did buy some cheap knockoff PS3 controllers, but the batteries didn't last for very long. Like, won't hold a charge now.
That's not even a year. Well, actually, that's just a little bit over a year old if you bought it at the release time.
PS3 controllers?
No, Dan's controller.
Yeah, no, I know. That's why I think it's probably. I have to double check on the warranty. But what I was going to say is, like, the black one, when I got a black one a little while ago, it was $59. Now it's $69, and then the different colors, they start jacking the price up on different colors.
You like, see, that pisses
and I'm
me
like,
off,
this is the same damn controller. Why are you charging?
I know.
Supply and demand.
Yeah.
Yeah, it happens. And it's like, you know, it costs the same to make each color for the most part.
That green dye is a lot more expensive than the black dye.
Right. Yeah. Believe that, I got a bridge to sell you.
Exactly.
Yeah, I mean it's not just on that, it's other things too, like like even this stuff as silly as underwear. You know, if you look on Amazon.com, like the white pair is this amount, the blue pair is this amount. It's like, well, I don't want to pay extra for the blue pair. It's like it's stupid.
But yeah, it's because they haven't been able to sell any of the blue ones. So they offer it a discount.
Probably. Yeah, but... Yeah, well... It's like trying to figure out why when you buy French fries with your hamburger, it's cheaper to buy it with the combo deal, but if you just want the drink and the fries because you already have drinks at home, you know, you pay more. It's like, usually happens with my wife because she doesn't drink pop.
Dun dun. You say I'm not going to pay a lot for that. So what you do is you just get the combo meal and spill the soda out then.
Yeah,
or you have yourself an extra,
or you get the unsweetened tea.
You have yourself an extra pop right there.
She doesn't do caffeine anymore either, and I just don't know how she does life without that. Because I need my caffeine.
Right, I've had two monsters and a pot of coffee today.
Damn,
I had most of a caref of the cold brew from my Presto Dorothy with Death Wish Coffee.
Yes, Death Wish Coffee. And you know, technically I only had one cup of coffee. It just happens that my cup is the size of the pot.
Yes. Yeah, I'll mix it up with some stuff too. And actually just learned about a new thing, and I might try it just because, well, I like chocolate. I'm trying to remember what the name of it was.
Any syrup?
No. This was essentially ground cacao beans. You brew it like coffee.
So it's like a hot chocolate then?
Not quite. It's more like coffee.
More like a Mexican hot chocolate? A little bit more bitter?
Probably.
So you haven't made it yet?
Haven't bought it
yet. Grind some more of my Death Wish.
Yes, that stuff is good. Creo Brew, that's the name of it.
So you're going to, is that your pot of coffee for sleeping?
I bet you could, the thing is, though, is cacao probably has caffeine in it. But chocolate does. On the main page there, they have peppermint mocha and cinnamon flavor. But they have others. I might try, like, the sampler kit. For sampler kits, like $35. Comes with multiple flavors. Just because I'm curious. My main curiosity with this stuff is, will it work in my cold brewer?
There's only one way to find out, right? Google that motherfucker.
Yep.
Or just try it. What's the worst that could happen? Yeah. What is the worst that could happen? You can't ruin
the
it.
Well, it depends on what... This sampler kit... Oh, they're in bags here. Okay. So they're done like tea bag.
So you got to tea bag yourself if you want to do it.
So if I wanted to try that, then... I might try getting like a bag of the peppermint mocha or something like that.
Not going to have as much caffeine as the Death Wish.
Oh, no question on that. Did you notice they started making a medium roast?
No. It takes me a long time to go through my bag of Death Wish. I think I'm down pretty close to the bottom right now, but...
Oh, I'll probably have mine done before the weekend, probably. I want to get there is a local, I wouldn't call them necessarily a micro roaster, but there's a local brand that's done here in Ohio called, I'm trying to remember, I posted a picture of it the other day, where I had the 614 blend. Yeah, I'm trying to remember the name of it. Silverbridge Coffee. And the one thing I want to try of theirs is they have a Highlander Grog flavor. I want to try that. I've had it before. I've had other Highlander Grogs before, but not this particular one. The best I can describe it is it kind of has a butterscotchy taste to it. It tastes
good. Got in a tea bag too?
No, I think they got them in whole beans.
Joel is always getting tea bagged.
Yeah.
Yeah, I like the whole bean stuff, man. I want to ground it myself. See, that's why I'm questioning Creole brew, because the cold brewer is very similar to a French press in that you want to have a medium grind. So if it's ground for drip, then that might be too fine. It just means I'd have a huge amount of sludge in the bottom of the cup. Which is not always a bad thing. Of course, maybe I can't. Actually, maybe I could set up an order up at Stoff's and have them and go pick it up at the curbside, because their stuff's really good too, and it's fresh. Roasted this week, usually.
To the local?
Yeah. Yeah, they're the ones. All the little cafes, like up on OSU campus and around the city, probably buy their stuff from them. Plus, they also own a couple shops here and there.
Yeah.
If you go to the website for Silverbridge, it says Highlander Grog is coffee, combines flavors of butterscotch, rum, and just a hint of vanilla. Which sounds delicious. Like, I don't often go for a flavored coffee, but I would that. You're more of a tea man, though, Hyundai, Dan.
I prefer water most of the time. That's tea's all right. Tea is all right.
Beer.
I'm not big on hot drinks.
I am this week.
Why is that?
He's in his garage office.
Cold.
No, oh, yeah, it's cold there, huh?
Yep. I'm always hot. My office is the only upstairs in our house, and heat fucking rises. I have to keep reminding my wife of that because she'll set the thermostat for 72. And have you ever seen those little? They'll call them hand boilers, which basically is a like a glass thing. It has methyl chloride in it, but you hold it and the liquid in it will bubble from the bottom.
Oh yeah, I know what you're talking about.
Yeah.
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 Okay.
It's so hot. Usually you take your hand off the bottom and it will, as it cools off, it'll all flow back down the bottom. But it's so hot in my office that it's sometimes it'll have it stuck in the middle. I should get a thermostat, and then the next time she turns it up to 72, I'll turn it down and say, "Stop it! This is how hot it is up here. Put some clothes on. Wear a freaking jacket." See, that's the thing I don't understand is during the winter she'll crank it up to 72, but in the summer she'll
turn it down to 65.
Yeah, or not 65, because I don't think ours goes that low, but 69. But I'm still like, that doesn't bug me as much. Because it's still warm up. In the summer, it gets warm. It's not, I don't think it's as warm as when the heat is on up here, but it's still pretty warm up here. But so part of the thing I've been doing, this is going to get technical a little bit, is I've been taking some training on Jenkins through a cloud guru, because I'm going to be leading the a project where we got a case where we have some of our Windows clients will have their cloud instances all joined to their domain, which is a problem because. Of course, he has to bring the cat up, and the cat's not happy. But anyway, so what we're going to do is we're going to move them into our domain, and they can still connect. And the only requirement there is they're going to have to have our SAML authentication turn on. But then at that point, the servers are in our domain, and one of the reasons why it's a big deal to get them off of the customer's domain and onto ours is that the customers have an annoying problem where they'll every once in a while they'll send something down via the domain controller so far as security and usually break their servers. So it's like, we got to stop that stuff. So, and we're going to do most of it with combo of GitOps, some hand stuff, not too much, but that's kind of one of the things I need to learn how to do. I don't necessarily have to write the code for that. It's probably already going to be written for us. It's more of putting together a checklist and who we got to pick a client that's going to be the best one to do first and so on and so forth. So it's just a way to improve security. Like one of the clients, we've kind of rushed them onto it. Was one of our clients actually got attacked by malware. Unfortunately, the malware never, it was actually not malware, it was ransomware. And fortunately, it didn't hit their cloud instances. So those were safe, but they were down for 3 or 4 days because of that, at least 3 or 4 days.
Did you say GitOps? G-I-T-O-P-S? Yeah. What is that?
Yes. Well, basically, we have a Git repo that stores like our YAML files for Ansible. We'll use the Git to store the code for that. And then I'm trying to remember. I think what we use is Cloudable.
Did they get him? We lost you.
I stopped talking because I was trying to type.
Okay.
So I'm still learning the infrastructure. So I think we use like Cloudable. Essentially, what it is to let the Jenkins call the code in the Git repo and have it execute that. So instead of storing the code elsewhere and putting it in the Jenkins, we have it stored in Git. So, but we're getting more sophisticated with some of our automations and stuff. We've got a bot.
GitOps doesn't use GitHub Actions though, does it?
Actually, I think it might. I have to look, but I'm not getting on the work laptop to do that right now. but we're learning and our engineers are pretty sharp. Eventually, our whole team will become both admin/engineers, including myself probably. That's kind of like the goal is because we got 20 clients in flight coming into cloud, which will raise us from like 50 or 60 to 70 or 80. And that's just what we have in the hopper right now. There might be more as the year goes on. So if we can't automate shit, we're in trouble.
Yeah, automation is a handy-mandy thing.
Yep.
I mean, go ahead.
I was going to say, that's actually how we fixed our Log4j issues, is we did a lot of automation. Still had a few here and there to do, but...
It makes it a lot easier to just dump it out there,
oh,
right?
Oh, God, yes. Yep. Yep. Well, we executed what we ended up doing is we did the automation so that we can execute it per client instead of doing multiple clients. I think ultimately the ultimate goal down on the line is we're using Zap pipelines as well. And actually, I think that's the ultimate goal is to migrate to a Zap pipeline instead of using Jenkins. So, but. That's all a little bit above me knowledge-wise. My right now, my thing is guiding the team so that when we do automate something, it doesn't break our core product. And that's the thing I know the best is the core product because I've only been doing this stuff for 20 years. So, but. A cloud guru is where I'm taking the Jenkins stuff, and I'm also in progress on an Ansible course as well there. And both are a part of, because a cloud guru bought Linux Academy. These are actually at one point Linux Academy courses. Wow. So the only problem I ran into is that the what I'm doing for Jenkins is kind of like is basically just a whole series of labs and hands-on stuff. So when you start the lab, it spins up a cloud instance of whatever you need for the lab. So I want to say Jenkins because most of the times Jenkins is involved there, but sometimes the very first one was installing Jenkins. Not that I need to know how to do that because it's already installed for us.
Right.
But so I go to install it, and the problem is they're using Jenkins Git repository, and of course they've updated it since they wrote the course, and Jenkins won't actually install.
I love it.
Dependency issues everywhere. But other than that, the rest of the labs have worked. Like the second one was basically just running like uname via Jenkins so that you can prove the server works. And then the third lab was setting up a Maven server.
Maven.
Yeah, I think it runs on Tomcat, I think it was. So.
Right.
Yep. But deploying that from a Git repo as well. So, but it's interesting. It's nice that they're hands-on and they give you an instance to play around with. They actually have an app for their for the site, for the Cloud Guru site. The only problem is I don't know how well that's going to work on like an iPad or a phone. But I guess you can watch the videos because there's a series of videos on it too. So, so far I'm liking it. That's the same thing I used to study for last year. I studied for my AWS Cloud Practitioner certification. Eventually I want to add like the architect one to it as well. And I think it's at some point in the next couple of years, we're going to start migrating things to Docker containers on top of Kubernetes.
There you go. That's the fun stuff. I was
yep.
I talked about doing that last week where I was working on a CBR, our Couchbase archive tool. I did our production environment. I wanted to see how well that would work. So that's like a 4.9. Actually 3.9 terabyte archive, and I fired that up and increased my persistent volume from 60 gigs to 4.5 terabytes. And you know what's pretty cool about doing that is it resized the persistent volume and didn't lose any of the data on it, so that was nice.
That's awesome.
So that was a perk and a half on that. It took me so the I started it on. I thought I said I might have started on Wednesday night, doing that like before I left work, and it pretty much got nowhere the first day. And I started it back up, and it was just running dog slow. So I had just provisioned this with the minimal RAM and one CPU. I think it hardly had anything, and it was taxing the system. So I'm like, all right, I'm going to go whole hog on this sucker. I'm going to request what did I request? 10 gigabytes? No. I'm trying to remember whether it was I requested 10 but a minimum of 8 CPUs, or whether it was just I requested 8 CPUs, or was it 4 CPUs and then with the RAM I did like minimum 8, requesting 10 just to see if I could get away with it, like not too much and nobody would notice, because now I have a 4.6 terabyte persistent volume and maxing out the RAM on it. And boy, that thing, I was impressed that did the G-Sync, the R-Sync from GSUtil for the bucket down to the persistent volume in about 6 hours it took to do the 4.9 terabytes. I will say, you know what, let me cut back on that and say 3.3 terabytes, because about 600 gigs was down there already from the previous attempt without the memory. The expanded memory, but no, that worked out pretty well. What I found interesting was that to extract the information we need from the archive in development at about 50 gig archive took like a second. To extract it from the 4.9 terabyte or 3.9 terabyte archive took
about a second, maybe a second and a quarter of a second. I mean, it was lightning fast how it came back. I was very impressed how their tool works. So bravo to them. Good job. And there we go. That's.
Yeah.
So I was pleased with that. And oh crap, I forgot to tear it all down today. I did a demonstration of it yesterday, and now I just have to tear it all down.
After the show, you can remote in and do that, right?
Yeah. Well, you know what? What I did is, I did production and it was running, and I proved that we could get what we need after the fact. You know, if there's ever an audit that comes out, and this is the process that we could take, and here are the containers. Like, I had everything set up, the containers, the Kubernetes manifests for the pod and the persistent volume, everything all documented and written up, and everything's good to go. So I figured I would demonstrate it. So I deleted the production environment and just redid dev with only a 50 gigabyte or a 60 gigabyte persistent volume, but I kept the CPUs and the memory for this thing. And the one guy who works more on the infrastructure side with the infrastructure team was like, yeah, you know, for this process, what we're doing here is something you got to get going quickly and get it and be done with these. Like, just throw the book at it, man. Just go hog wild, get it done with. I think what's probably going to, you know, we have to be concerned more about, as opposed to the CPU cycles and the RAM, would probably be the transfer cost from archival storage.
Because
archival storage is, I think, what I was looking at is the cold. I don't know if it's cold storage or archival storage. I forget which one is more long term, but it's like really, really cheap to store things there. But if you want to retrieve them, it's going to cost you a little bit more money.
And it also takes a while too. I know AWS is the same way when going from like a I'm trying to remember the levels. I knew it at one point. But going from your basic S3 where it's instantly available to deep archives. I think it's one of them, deep archive, I think, and then others. You know, in the recovery time, I don't think an AWS would necessarily get charged for transfer time as much as it just takes, the recovery time increases depending on what you're doing, which direction you're going. Like, for example, going from an S3 bucket or a block device might be a whole lot cheaper, you know, going to direct to the storage than it would be to retrieve it, and take less time too. So, I'm not as much of an expert at how much that stuff costs than others. Now, I know we're running into some issues with some of our clients where their SQL box might be a little bit under provision, and they're starting to have performance issues. So that's something we got to probably deal with here in the next few months with some of these clients. But other things like that too, like when we initially set up the template for setting up a certain product on their prior version, they bring out a new version that has higher requirements, but we haven't changed our template. So we'll see how that happens as well. But we're just trying to get to like we got the client, they opened up a ticket with the product vendor because it's, you know, they pay for it direct to them, all right? And they can do that. And then they'll open up a ticket and says, Intrinsic says you should do this, but yet we have our own accounts with Intrinsic where we can get the requirements from them as well. So it's just trying to get rid of the client as the middleman. But so hopefully we can get some of that stuff resolved, but you know, we'll see what happens. Things are progressing, at least for us, they're progressing in the right direction, not the wrong one. So that's good. Getting better as opposed to getting worse. And I'm not on call anymore either, so.
You know, I gotta double check. I gotta look further into this because I always hate looking through these pricing things and trying to figure out what needs to do and what you need to do.
Right. But,
so like, and so Google's pricing is fact. There's a couple of factors you have to take in consideration, and one of them is location. So if you like in Northern Virginia, so there's four kind of stores. Different types of storage: standard storage, nearline storage, cold line storage, and archive storage. So we'd be looking at probably archive storage, and depending on where you're going, like in Northern Virginia, archive storage per gigabyte per month is a quarter of a cent. Whereas if you're in Iowa, data center, it is a twelfth of a cent. So there's a pretty big, you know, a significant difference there. And if you're like Iowa and South Carolina is like half a cent.
That's weird they charge by the distance, but okay.
Well, it's not distance. I mean, this is the data, the region.
Center, right.
The region. Right. If you want it in this region, it's going to cost, it's different price. So then there's regions. And then, there's a network cost involved if you move or copy data from cloud storage to another, or when Google Cloud Service accesses data in your cloud storage bucket. Now, if I'm reading this correctly, and they say data moves from cloud storage bucket located in a dual region to a different cloud storage, like if it's a cloud storage bucket to another Google service, it looks like it's no cost. But if you're moving like from different locations on the same continent, there's like a one cent gigabyte per gigabyte bandwidth usage charge.
Yeah. See, that's interesting because the way the way S3 buckets work in AWS is there is no region on those. The S3 buckets have no region, and they're available, like, if you have a server in U.S. West, which is Oregon, or U.S. East, which is Virginia, that same bucket is accessible in both places. So, at least with the near-term S3 buckets, you know, there's other levels, you know, like, same thing. There's, like, an archival level and stuff like that. So, but then Amazon also gives you like this the AWS Cost Explorer, which helps you figure that kind of stuff out. And there's tools within AWS that once you're really there, I think there's like a tool if you're not a client, so you can figure out, well, what's it going to cost you to move to the cloud, you know, and various things like that to determine the actual costs, because you know the one thing that kind of irked me a little bit was dealing with some of our support folks who help both us in the cloud as well as on-prem clients, where you know they're literally acting like, well, storage in the cloud's unlimited. I'm like, no, it's not unlimited, it costs money. Oh, I just noticed this wild thing. I got my Gmail up, and I saw this little tab on the right-hand side, and you click it, and there's a side on Gmail now. It might have been there for a while. I just never noticed it. Weird. But, yeah, I think plus I think a future too with some of the issues that Amazon's been having is I think more companies are going to start to look towards doing multi-cloud solutions where you're not just where you don't have your eggs all in the Google basket or all in the AWS basket, you know, where you might have part of your infrastructure in Google and part of your infrastructure in AWS. So that's probably going to start to happen. You know, like maybe you might use Amazon for your archival storage, but your near term is hosted by Google or whatever, you know.
Yeah, but it gets so expensive, though, too.
Yeah, you ain't kidding.
It racks up fast. It's not free because someone else is running it.
It's still cheaper than building a data center.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I guess either. But not for Joe.
Data center construction's expensive.
Joe, you have your own data centers, don't you?
Yes. Yeah. We have our own data centers. Everything we do is in-house.
It's just...
Well, we never seem to have enough space anyway.
It's usually the case.
Yeah.
Well, maybe part of your infrastructure might be in Ohio, Dan, in the future.
At your house?
No, well, down the street from my church, in what used to be an old piece of farmland, Google's building a data center.
Ah, there you go.
Now, they're not going to have a huge staff running it. You're talking, I think, after construction. I mean, there's going to be literally hundreds of jobs to get the construction completed because it's huge. I mean, I don't know how many acres the main data center building will be, but it's large, very large. And once it's built, my understanding is they're only going to have like about 30 people on site working for Google or contracted to Google. So, and it's weird how they kind of hit it with, I'm trying to remember the name of the, there was like a, I forget what they call it. I want to call it a shadow company or basically either the name of the company is like, I think Magellan, I think, or something like that. But it's really Google.
Did you get yourself a job there?
Nah.
They're looking for you, Joel. They're saying we need a guy who can host our...
I'd be okay with that.
Yeah.
Because I know they pay well.
And they'll have it's a what?
Well, the name of the place, the name of where it's being built was called the Hartman Stock Farm, and it's says once world's largest working farm, Hartman's Stock Farm to be Google Computing Center. That's it says Google Computing Center. It doesn't really say what. Yeah, you know, I assume it's going to be for their cloud hosting. It's going to cost $300 million. Oh, it's 500-acre site.
Huh?
That's how big it is. It's just like literally just down the street from where my church is. This is the application. This is all when we're talking about all the zoning and all that. It was brought before the council by Magellan Enterprises LLC, which was later revealed to be a shell company for Google.
It that they don't say what they specifically focus on, though, do they? For that company?
No. Yeah. I assume that might be just the company.
I mean, Alphabet?
Yeah. I assume that might just be the company they're using to... I don't
everything,
want to say hide that it's Google.
Like everything, you know, secretly owned by Google?
It could be.
Alphabet?
That's like one of the things I've been thinking of is... I want to find some security cameras to put up, like I want to put one up, like up by the garage, outside, and then maybe one in the southeast corner of the house in the back that could basically show like where the air conditioner, my pit boss, and the screen room is. I'm looking for what I'm ideally looking for is a wireless camera. It can be Wi-Fi, but I would also want the camera to have a solar panel on it. And I don't mind pulling it down to charge, but my hope would be that if I have one with all that also comes equipped with a solar panel, that I don't have to do that. So that way they'll be online all the time. One of the ones that's in running is Nest has some cameras. The Nest camera, they don't have a solar panel kit for it just yet. They're still working on that. That's going to be priced $60 when it comes out, but I think the camera's right around $150. But my only thing is, though, with Nest is I am assuming there's probably going to be a storage cost for the video and the service. So I'm not so sure I want to do that necessarily. Wyze actually has a special deal going on with their Cam Plus, but Wyze doesn't make it. I don't think Wyze makes anything that's going to work for what I want it for. So, we'll see. I'm going to be waiting until it's warm enough to do work outside. Because right now, like, I cooked some dinner, stuff that I probably would have normally threw on the pit boss. But it's just too damn cold to stand out there right now and cook.
That pit boss is a pellet grill, right? You don't have to stand out there and cook. You just fill it up and run away.
Yeah, well, but here, there's also a negative, too. It's the one thing that pit bosses do have a problem with, unless you have, like, an insulation blanket around it, is keeping the temp once it gets to a certain, like, once it gets cold outside. So it's probably not as flexible as propane, but there you go. So I did my dinner in a skillet tonight. It still tasted good. So just didn't have that smoky flavor to it. So that's going to be probably a summer project I want to do once it's a little warmer, is putting his cameras up outside. Especially now as the homes being built behind us, they've broken ground and got footers poured. They're basically at the phase my house was about this time last year.
Uh-huh.
So those ones will probably be closing, depending on what kind of limits or issues they have with supplies. I would think those ones will probably close right around the same time we close, about July time frame. One's across the street. I bet you they're going to be February or March, because I know a couple of them are drywall. They were putting up siding on some of those, but it's noisy. But once it's more of a neighborhood, I'm a little bit more worried about security, and once there's more people back here. So that stuff can wait. But, I mean, we do have a doorbell cam and then the security system itself. So, you know, I don't feel like somebody's going to come take stuff, but it's just the idea, you know? But, and I started planning our first, I'm going to call it camping because I don't really call it glamping, but our first camping trip of the year, it's going to be like April 1st through the 4th, with 4th is my birthday, up at Kelly's Island on Lake Erie. I went into the Reserve Ohio website and I reserved what they call a Sherman cabin, which is a cabin that has sleep up to four, but it'll either have like a bunk and then a bed, you know, so two people in the bunk, one person in the bed, or it's going to have two sets of bunks. All right. And that's in the bedroom section of the cabin. And then out in the other sec, the kind of the community section where, you know, where we'll spend time if it's raining or something. there is a table out there as well as quite a bit of room. Like I can bring in my coolers and stuff into the cabin. And it has a mini fridge and a microwave. I'd still have to cook outside, which I'm fine with that. Yeah, I'm gonna lobby my wife that I can get a Blackstone, one of the portable propane Blackstone cooktops for that camping trip for my birthday. I don't know if I'll get it or not, but I do have a regular camp stove, but I kind of like the idea of making pancakes on that griddle. So, have you seen the Blackstones yet, Dan?
No, I haven't.
It's essentially like a way you could cook hibachi at home.
Uh-huh.
Or since I'm going to get the portable one, I can take it with me and do that. But I guess I can use it for... I don't know why, but Blackstone will put, like, you can cook this many hamburgers at the same time. It's like, why would I do that? And grab some charcoal and do it on a grill, you know? But I guess I'm going to use it more for, like, you know, like breakfast, like I cook eggs and pancakes and stuff on it.
To call the Blackstone?
Yeah. Blackstone cooktops. They have them in both propane and electric. So, and they're really getting popular. I know Sam's Club has one. And they also have models that, like, that would be more appropriate at home. They have wheels on it, just like your grill might.
Uh-huh.
But the one I kind of want is one that I can just throw on top of the picnic table and cook. And then maybe, actually, also reminds me, I should probably look for, I don't have a 20-pound tank now. I ended up taking the one I had back because I don't really need it for anything like at home. But I might grab a 20 or maybe a 10-pound that I could take with this on camping. And they make a attachment for it that screws right into the valve. And at the bottom, at the top of it, it has a place where you can screw in your lantern, propane lantern, and then about midway through the tree is a couple attachments for things like your a Blackstone grill or a propane stove. So, and it's a lot cheaper to buy a propane that way versus buying those little 1-pound cylinders. Those 1-pound cylinders can be expensive. But we'll see. I can't wait, because when you go up there, the best part is there's no cell service.
How much does it cost per night?
The cabin's $72 a night. There's also we'd have to pay for the ferry, because we have to ride a ferry across from Marblehead to Kelly's Island, which is right in the middle of Lake Erie. But once you're there, they don't have, like, they have restaurants there, but pretty much all the restaurants are going to be mom and pops. There's not going to be like a Chipotle or a Chili's on the island. So it's all going to be things like there's a pub style restaurant in the West Coast, which is actually really cool. The way they have it set up is if you're there at sunset, you can literally sit and eat dinner and watch the sunset while you're eating dinner, which is pretty cool. But, and then other places like that, there is, near the, in the state park section, which is where I would be staying, there is some glacial grooves, so you can see where when the glaciers was going over North America, it grow the rocks and stuff in the glacier make grooves into the bedrock and was sticking out right there. So
that's nice.
It's just a relaxing time.
Do you have to make reservations there?
I did. In fact, I may actually start looking for later in the summer. Down in southern Ohio, there's a state park by the name of Lake Hope. I think that's where when I was fourth or fifth grade, we lived in Athens, Ohio, and I got a telescope for my birthday. Uh-huh. And mom and dad took us to a state park down there because it was away from all the lights of the city and stuff. And I think it was Lake Hope, but in those cabins, they're basically more of a larger cabin. It has like a full kitchen and a huge fireplace in it. I think that's what they call their traditional cabins. And right now, that's the only that has it. All the other parks either have these little Sherman cabins, like we'll stay up on Kelly's, or they may also have a yurt, which is similar to those cabins, but it's more like a tent that's up all the time and has actually a full kitchen. I think it even has a TV in it too. Not that I care, but I've always, like, when I was like, you know, fourth, fifth grade. We lived in Ohio from when I was in fourth grade through part of junior high, because we lived for a couple years in Athens, and then we moved up by Lake Erie, up by Westlake, which is closer to Cleveland. And in that time period, my family stayed at a lot of state parks here in Ohio. I have one of the best systems in the country, I think.
You gonna take some Wi-Fi with you? Connect up to a satellite?
You know, the last time I went, and I'll probably see the same thing. It's actually not all that, because it's right in the middle of Lake Erie. It's not all that far from Canada. And when, okay, I was there the last time, I looked at my phone, and it doesn't cost me none because that's the way my plan is. It's fine. But I looked at my phone, and it was connected to a cell in Canada.
Oh, was it LTE or?
Barely.
4G?
It was very slow 4G.
Wow.
And that's when I could get connected at all. So, oh yeah, and the other thing those cabins have, they do have air conditioning and heat, so that's nice. So I guess it's a little like glamping, but there's no TVs, there's no, you know, kitchen in the cabin. It's just the cabin. You can eat in there
as long as you got your cell phone and your CPAP machine, and they both work. You're good to go.
Oh yeah. Yep. Yep, and I think this time I want to do more hiking this time. It's one of the things with camping, depending on what kind of tent you got, is sometimes setting your tent up can be a pain in the ass. Not to mention the fact is that when we go, my wife and my son are both too short to really help. Note to self, before we actually
bring
go tent
footstool.
Camping... Yeah. Well, no, I'm looking at, there's tents now where basically you just throw it out and it kind of expands. They even have them large enough to fit us in it that are like that. So basically I just throw it out.
How much of a pain in the ass is to get it back down again?
Some of the ones I've seen don't look like they're that bad. You know, like you walk inside and you pull down, like there's pulls in the ceiling or something, and you pull them down, and it kind of collapses in on itself. So, and the poles, and those ones, I think most of the poles are integrated into it. So then all you have to do is kind of unfold it and pop up. Okay, it might not pop up automatically like some like a there's like little beach tents that'll do that. So right. It might not be just like that, but it's like just a matter of grabbing a loop or something on the top and pulling it up, and it just pops right up.
Huh? How much more does that cost compared to a regular? Like put it your.
They're about the same.
Oh, about the same.
They're about the same. Huh? Yeah.
I'll tell you what.
You're looking at between $150 and $200 for a decent tent.
I don't know, and that's
for a cheap decent tent.
I don't know if it's just me, but tents and tarps and all that shit. Like once I get them out and set them up, I can never fold them back up again and put them back properly in whatever case that they come with.
It's put always them in that like, little bag that they came with. How the hell did it fit there in the first place?
Right.
Yeah, I know.
Folded by a machine. I'm with you on
that. That's why the canopy.
It's like half
I have,
sticking out when I'm done with it. I'm like, God damn it! I can't even fit the poles in here now.
See, the canopy I have is basically now it does. The poles do like the poles are telescoping, but really you literally just like I'll grab it on one side and Luke will grab it on the other side and we pull it until it's as far out as possible, and the canopy is already attached to it. For the most part, it might be. It depends on how I put it away the last time.
Well, there we go.
Yeah. So
it works
either
fine
way,
if you do it right.
Right, but all I got to do is throw that over the frame, and then there's little Velcro straps, and then I can fully extend the frame, and then stake down the poles. You know, the poles have like a flange at the bottom, and you just stake down those, and then I like to put the guidelines out on it too, because you know, wind's a thing. But it actually goes up really easy. Now, the one I had before that was a moral pain in the fucking ass because it had four poles, one on each corner, and then had a center pole that would go right on top of the picnic table. Well, when you're trying to put it together on a Friday night and you just got the tent up, you're just like, fuck it, I'll wait till the morning. That's what I was like.
It comes with a picnic table?
No. You use the picnic table that's at the campsite already.
Well, what if there isn't a picnic table?
Well, that's a really good point, too, there.
Do you take a grill inside the tent and cook in there, too?
No, not in the tent. That's dangerous.
Yeah, no kidding.
Yeah.
That's how they do it in Texas, right, Joe?
Well, see, that's what... I don't even like, I do have a propane lantern, and I kind of wanted to get rid of it when we were moving. And my wife's like, I like the lantern. I'm like, okay, we'll keep it. Because my big thing is I'd like to just take the lantern and carry it into the tent. I don't really like the idea of something being
powered by
propane.
You can get rather large USB batteries.
Oh, yes.
And then you can get USB lights.
Yes. Yes. I mean, that's what I would still use it, but I'd leave it outside on the picnic table. You know.
Sounds like the smart thing to do, honestly.
Yeah. Yeah, really. You know, carbon monoxide's also a thing, too, and that's another thing you have to worry about with that kind of propane stuff. But,
Just build the campfire right in the center of the tent, right there.
Well, if it was a teepee, I could do that.
Or if there was a vent.
Yes.
Any kind.
Yes. But, nah. The only question I have that I did email them, because it's relatively early in the season to go there. So the ferry, I need to make sure that I don't miss the last ferry when I'm going up there.
How many ferries do they run?
There's one ferry. That goes over, it goes over multiple times a day, and in the early season like that, it's probably not as often.
Okay.
But they usually are the last one's usually gone by 4:30, 5 o'clock. So.
Oh, reverse grip bent over rows. Gotta love them.
Yeah. Is that dumbbell or barbell?
Barbell.
Yeah.
Barbell. But tech though, I might take like my iPad and then load it up with a whole bunch of like downloaded Netflix porn shit, you know. But I try only to watch that shit when I'm in the, you know, settling down for the night, you know.
The porn?
No. No porn. It's family trip.
Family porn.
Well, no. Maybe you no, watch no, with no. your wife. I don't know.
Nah. I'm probably also going to take not as much food as I took the last time, because we're going about the same time period. And I acted like I was going to cook every meal. I ain't going to do that. There's two good restaurants on the island.
Oh, what, so here it sounds like you're going to this remote place, but what is it? It's a town on the island, and it's got restaurants, yeah, and convenience stores. Yeah, you can't even get the Walmart.
It's
there.
In the woods. No, it's in the woods.
There, it's in the woods, woods the about 15 at. Feet from the parking lot for Walmart.
There's no Walmart on the island. There's a mom and pop grocery store, which is really cool, actually.
Is it called Mom and Pop?
It might be. I don't know. I forget the name of it, but there's that. For that, and there's actually like people that actually live on the island. I don't know how I could do that, because it's very touristy. So like the stuff that's on the island.
Well, they probably make pretty decent money, you know, catering to the touristy folk.
Yeah, they just like myself. It's a little bit different than Middle Bass is another island that's you can actually see it, Kelly's. That one's more like a bar island. I believe there's only a people ferry to go over to the island, but they do have places that you can stay. So like you can take your bags and stuff on the ferry with you. But like just to get around the island over there, I think you can rent like a golf cart. You rent a golf cart at Anglais too, but it doesn't make sense because you know you can just drive around it. But
is it big enough that they have like people actually live on the island?
Yeah,
that's what he said.
Yeah.
Oh, I'm sorry.
There's about 150 that are permanent residents on the island.
He's gonna get out there, and then there's gonna be some random cold snap. It's gonna drop down to like -40.
Well, in the middle, well, it wouldn't go that cold in April, but it could go 30s or 40s easily in April. I remember we went up there. Actually, we went up there in like early June, I think, one time for a ham radio thing. They were doing setting up a station on the island to activate the island.
You know, I seem to remember saying something similar about Texas, and we had that snowpocalypse thing.
Right. But,
wait, can you see the island from the shore?
I think you can. It might be off of the distance. The ferry ride about 20 minutes. So
20 minutes, okay.
Yeah, so it doesn't take that long. But like you could see, like I could see the shore from the island. Like in fact, there's a amusement park up there called Cedar Point that you can see from the island. I would not be going across on the ferry to go to Cedar Point. It just doesn't make sense. If I wanted to go to Cedar Point and stay on the other side. But that's not happening because they want $85 a head at the gate.
At the ferry?
No, at the
amusement park.
I was going to say, damn, $85 a person across. How much does a ferry cost?
It's about 90, if I remember right.
$90 per car,
I think. I have to go look. Yeah, well, you pay to go over, but then when you go back, you don't have to pay.
That's the round trip ticket for $90.
Right. Yep.
Okay.
Is that per person or just
better per vehicle? Per person. I was going to say
per vehicle.
Damn.
Per vehicle. Yeah. Yeah. You can actually one nice thing if it's nice, if the weather's nice enough out. Once you get the car parked, you can actually get out and they have a place you can go sit. both inside. And even have bathrooms on the ferry too, if you really need to go. But
you just stand on the 20-minute ride. You just stand right there on the edge and look over at the water. That's what we do. You take the ferry twice a year.
Yeah.
You know, once in the start of summer, once at the end of summer, Surrey Ferry, it's free, and it runs 24/7. They have either two running or three or four running at a time.
Yep.
Goes from Surrey to Jamestown. Have you ever taken the ferry? You've been to Jamestown, right?
I've been to Jamestown, yeah, but I don't remember. It was a long time ago, though.
Yeah.
I think I was in high school when I did that.
Oh, yeah, it was a long time ago. Maybe they didn't. That's all they had back then were ferries, horse-drawn ferries, right?
Oh, I don't know. I know we went to Jamestown because my dad had a – my mom got a like a little flower pot at the little shop that's there. And I think my dad got a coffee cup there. He either got there or he got it at Williamsburg.
Well, I'll tell you what. I'll bet you it's changed a lot since you've been there.
To Jamestown, yeah.
Yeah.
And I know Williamsburg had too, because at that time they had the root beer, but like the shops that had the food and stuff, Williamsburg, they didn't have any of the alcohol at that time. They do now. Like you can get a beer at some of the Colonial Williamsburg shops, you can get a beer there. Not a beer and drink it, but like a beer to take home and drink. You'd have to go to the restaurants to get a beer to drink it. But yeah, because I was there in 2016 when we were there for my mom. When we put her ashes at the Governor's Palace. So... But yeah, actually, one thing I kind of want to do that I didn't get to do last time I was down in Williamsburg is I think if you go over to the Armory, you can sign up. They have a class where you can go and learn how to fire a flintlock.
You don't have to go to a class for that? I mean...
Well, yeah. What they'll do is they'll take you to the range and they'll train and they'll show you how to load it.
Okay. Not everybody grew up with crazy people like I did. I was shooting black powder rifles and flintlocks as a kid.
Yep. I have a friend who I want to say it's SCA, but it's not. It's like that. SCA is more medieval. It's Society for Creative Enactment. Yeah, I forget what he does, but he'll dress up at, like a American explorer, like in a
buckskins.
Yeah, kind of like that. But and he'll go out and take his flintlock. He has several flintlocks. I don't know if he has any caps in it. Yeah, he is. I mean, I think he does Civil War reenactments as well. Which that really fascinates me, the Civil War reenactors. Just that, and I've been to, I've been to Gettysburg, and there is a fort not too far from where we live in Philly, in Delaware. I think it's Pea Patch Island, I think. But that's a Civil War fort. Not like Fort Monroe, where your house is there, Dan.
Yeah.
And I still want to go on the Chesapeake Bay Bridge Tunnel. I've never been on that yet.
Oh, you've never been on the Bay Bridge Tunnel? Well, I guess you wouldn't be because it's not going anywhere.
No, I've been on the one in Hampton Roads.
Yeah, no, not the Chesapeake Bay Bridge Tunnel.
No, I've been the one I was at was the one in Hampton Roads. Yeah, Pea Patch Island is... Hang on, Delaware has that kind of hook at the top of it. It's right there at the bottom there, right at the Delaware River.
Okay.
It's kind of right... I'm trying to think if it's still brackish there, if it's saltwater there. It might be brackish there still. But there's an actual Civil War fort there. It's really neat to walk through. Got a moat around it. And we got there by a boat. A friend of Dad's had a boat, and we launched it in Chester, Pennsylvania, and went down the river, down the Pea Patch Island. I think it's where I got a souvenir there of the belt buckle that they wore in the Civil War, the Union did. And then we went down to Independence Hall, which is really cool too. And I saw and got to touch the Liberty Bell and see Ben Franklin's shop down there.
That's cool.
I probably need to get...
It's been a long time since I saw the Liberty Bell. Back when I was in elementary school.
But was it in that? It's in a building now, but was it? I don't think it always was in a building. Its own building. I thought it was at the Independence Hall. No, wait. No, the building was there when I was a kid. So I was in high school when I went there. That's also when the naval base had much more storage there in Philadelphia. Philadelphia Naval Base. They had a lot of ship restorations they did there. Like the Forrestal was there when we lived there, and I think it's now decommissioned. But that's about the only place in Philly I like is that Independence Hall area. The rest of it's pretty nasty. I need to make a trip out to Hershey Park area soon, too.
What are you going out there for?
I got family lives out in Harrisburg.
Oh.
My aunt lives out there. Last I heard, I haven't heard any updates, but her husband... I guess my uncle, her husband, Dan Casey is his name. He's got pretty hard by COVID. So I don't know what else is going on with him, but I would hope that they let us know if he does pass or something, but.
Oh, that stinks.
But yeah, well, he'll probably recover. Like I have my brother-in-law and his whole family. One thing I want to tell you, anyone listening, don't go on a freaking cruise now. I have had two friends that went on cruises. Both of them had at least part of their family or their whole family hit by COVID. Well,
my aunt, my stepmom, and my grandma all went on a cruise, and none of them got COVID, and that was December.
That's pretty amazing. That's pretty amazing. Yeah.
They were a little bit surprised by it, and they went on the cruise, but they never got off the boat at any of the locations they stopped at to go visiting. And,
Maybe that's it.
They don't recommend it just because of, you know, COVID.
I mean, I haven't heard a lot of cases coming from planes, But I have heard multiple people that I know that got hit by just going on a cruise.
Well, the planes,
these were cruise people before.
You are stuck a lot closer, but I think most of your airlines right now are trying to enforce the, you know, mask mandates and things like that. So,
well, they don't have a choice right now because of federal law, but or federal mandate.
And I'm not sure if the cruises require you to have the vaccine.
I don't know. I know that my sister-in-law, she was fully vaxxed and had her booster, and she still got it.
Well, I'll tell you what. I didn't go on a cruise before the pandemic. I ain't going on a cruise during the pandemic, and I probably won't go on a cruise after the pandemic.
You see,
I wouldn't mind getting to go on a cruise. It's just, you know, they're prohibitively expensive.
Right.
Yes. Yes, it's just like when I heard the you know, now I've been to both of them, but more recently I've been to Kings Island probably more than I've been to Cedar Point. They're both owned by the same company, by Valley Fair.
Yeah, but those are amusement parks, not cruises.
Right, right. Well, I mean, the thing with the going to the amusement park is, like, they have, like, restaurants you might know in there now. It's not just, like, buying it at some random stand where it could be just about anything. So they have, like, Chick-fil-A and a Starbucks all in the park now. But you go to get dinner. Like, I went to get dinner for me, Misty, and Luke at the Chick-fil-A in Kings Island. This is his senior year, okay? It cost me $60 for freaking Chick-fil-A. So I'm like, yeah, no.
Yeah, but see, you know what? That's the thing right there.
Right.
If I'm going to go to an amusement park, don't shovel me the fucking overpriced Chick-fil-A stuff and McDonald's, right? Man. Just put in your own snack bar and overcharge me for something that way. I don't feel like I'm being taken advantage of that much. If you're going to charge,
you know, okay, twice that's as a much, very, very
I
good
don't
point.
Know, I don't know if you've talked to anybody that's been on a cruise recently or gone on a cruise yourself or anything like
those
that.
Cruises, right?
But the system that they have set up is you don't actually spend money on the cruise. You don't use your own.
Right.
You don't use your own credit card. Right. Yeah. They give you, well, now they give you a card, and then they don't tell you how much things cost until it's time to pay.
Right. Or like they do with Disneyland where you have the stupid band on it. That's another place I don't want to go.
Do you have like a preloaded amount on that card, or does it just... Oh, wow.
They want you to be surprised there at the end.
That's a surprise.
So, like, each dinner is like $800, right?
I don't know. I know my aunt evidently lost like $600 or $700 gambling.
Wow.
Didn't really notice.
Didn't notice that money going right out of her wallet, huh? Her bank account.
Because it wasn't in her wallet or her bank account. It was on that stupid card.
What? So, the card that you gamble with is the card that you eat with?
I guess.
Wow.
Well, I also expect that you get X number of meals that come with the trip. I don't know this for certain, but I assume you get, you know, your three meals a day with that. And then if you want something beyond that, you have to pay for it. Like drinks, I assume you have to pay for. And those are probably, you know, $15 each.
See, I was under the impression it was very similar to what they do at Disneyland, or Disney World, I mean, down in Florida.
Oh, I might be wrong. They might have told me wrong. I have no idea.
Right. Because back then, now my sister-in-law has been down there before, and then after they implemented that band that you know, they send you a box, so every family member gets this little band that you wear when you go into the park. That's how you get into the park. That's how you, I guess, get in the shows. I don't know, but I know that most people usually buy a package when they go to Disney World. That's, like I said, I have no desire to go there. You know, I had no desire when I was a kid, have no desire now.
When we went to Disney, the wife, Jackie, has some family that works there. So we were able to
All right.
get in. I don't know if it was for free or just a very discounted rate.
They stuck you in through the grease trap.
Yeah, something like that.
Yeah.
Well, I was wondering like why I had to low crawl the rest of it.
Yeah, my grandparents, they were house parents at the Hershey School. So they when they retired, for the rest of their life, they got a free pass to Hershey Park. So they would take me and my brother all the time. They'd only have to pay for us to get in, and they paid a discounted rate at that for that too.
For the super duper double looper.
Yeah, super duper looper. I wrote it.
We got to wrap this up, Joel. Hurry up, finish your thought.
Yes, we do.
This time already?
Yeah, finish what you were saying.
It was amazing to me how scared I was to go on the super duper looper when I was a kid, and now I'm just like, meh. I've been on more intense coasters since then.
Isn't it? It's the super duper double looper, isn't it? No, that's a toy.
No, it only has one. And it's right across the way from the Comet, which is probably the older one in there.
Yeah, super duper
looper. I haven't been on anything new. Last time was to Hershey Park. I actually did go in the park. Wait, no, I did, because I think when my grandma died, it was like grandpa died. It was right around Thanksgiving. He passed on Thanksgiving, but they had already set up the Christmas stuff at Hershey Park. So we got to go into part of the park. And this was like 2002, or no. No, that was like 97, 98, somewhere in there. I wasn't, no, it was 90, it had to have been 96, no, because I wasn't married.
All right.
But I was with my wife. So.
All right. Super Duper Double Looper was a Tyco slot car racing set.
Yes.
All right. And with that, we gotta play out the promos, right? Right, Joe?
Yes, we did.
Yep.
Here we go. Here are your promos. All right.
Fire I away. Am short.
Oh, my yep. God.
It's Hacker
Public Radio. Hacker Public Radio is a daily podcast by the hacker community for the hacker community. If you're interested in technology, creative thinking, hacking, Linux, or any kind of computer, that kind of stuff, you should listen to Hacker Public Radio at hackerpublicradio.com.
Hello, my name is Matt, and I've started a new podcast called Libre Quest. About Linux and general technical topics. To get the show, visit LibreQuest.org.
So we can paint anything we want?
Anything at all.
How about if I paint your fine ass? Yeah, with my tongue brush.
Shut up.
Just shut up.
Daddy has a gun!
It's over.
Well, you were making egg poo young in the kitchen. I was in the dining room. Sushi.
Hearing that HPR promo was making me think about Klaatu. We haven't heard from him in a long time.
No, he does the GNU World Order.
He used to do. I haven't checked in a while, but yeah, he used to put up shows on HPR.
Yeah, GNU World Order still going on. He does it like almost every week.
For a while there, he was going through like every single command that had a man page.
Yeah, he was going through the package lists and Slackware and living life in New Zealand.
Yep. His last episode. When was it?
How old is Klaatu?
Younger than all of us, probably.
Younger than us, but older than he looks, I think.
Older than he sounds?
Yes. Dun-dun.
So he lives in New Zealand now. That's pretty neat.
Yeah. All right. I'm going to stop this recording so I can get the show out. Say goodnight, Joel.
Good night, Joel.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's time for some sleepy time tea, Joel?
No, sir. Not yet.
Oh, I see Joe and Pat are there. What's up? Hey, what's up, buddy? Joe is testing his microphone. Hey, what's up, man? Did you guys get snow this week up there in Ohio and Pennsylvania?
Nope.
A little bit, like 2 inches.
And we haven't gotten any since last week, and they were talking about possibilities, but nothing happened. It just goes from like 20 degrees to 50 degrees and then 26 degrees down up to 50 again and back down to 26 like every other day. Whereas for you, Joe, right? It's a balmy 65 degrees every day, huh?
I wish. I think it got up to 65 today. But I think the low is like...
We're at 33 right now.
I
think we're at...
Low today was 37.
Yeah, we're at 44 right now. It was 20... It was 29 when I woke up this morning. It was went up to 49.
And oh, your snow melted.
Well, our snow was gone like the next day. I don't even think you could find snow the next day down here.
Well, it's going to be 74 tomorrow.
Yeah.
That'll be nice.
We're back up to the 50s. Well, end of the high 40s. 48, 49.
Saturday it's supposed to be 45 and Sunday 48, but then it's supposed to be 58 and 5 and then 63.
Yeah.
Tomorrow and Friday will be nice. Hopefully I can go for a bike ride.
I think I may go to the gym tomorrow. A bold Monday.
Go back over there and down some more weights. Get it.
All right, this is episode 238 tonight, Joel. 238. No, not 200.
That number's wrong.
938. I keep mixing up the first number, the hundreds, and I always get the tens and ones correct. 938. Wow, 938. Got all the recordings going. We're almost good to go. I just got to cue up the intro music. We don't have
that cable replaced.
No, I didn't actually. I completely forgot about that until I sat down here right now. Because other things happened this past week that took my attention away from those things.
Oh, boy.
Yeah. Fortunately, not tech. Most of it was not tech related, but. Well, somewhat tech related, but not to my computers. Da 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 da. Da, da, da. Oh, I got one tech-related thing. I got a car. So much. What to do. Right?
Indeed.
We'll use that one today. Thank you. All right. There we go. We're all set to go.
Yeah, we can tell you haven't fixed that cable.
Yeah. When let me see. There we go. Is it?
Crackle pop.
Crackle pop.
Look at that. I'm bouncing the cable around and it's not doing it now. What?
I don't know.
Yeah. It must be. I bet you it's probably loose where it's connected in. That's.
Watch, it's the jack.
Yeah, that's what I'm wondering. I'm wondering if the jack is having issues. Because it doesn't.
USB sound cards are for.
Yeah, I have a USB sound card, so. I have a couple of them. So I have to get that going.
Oh, it's good to keep around.
Yeah. Oh, yep. So, all right. Episode 938. Gonna give us a count around, Joel.
Sure.